This is Director Jared Maples of the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and I want to welcome you to Season 2 of Intelligence Unclassified. This season, we are refocusing our episodes to better reflect our office's three core mission areas: counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and emergency preparedness. We'll be pulling both local and national experts in these three fields, all in an effort to discuss New Jersey's diverse threat landscape and offer you a unique perspective on the current trends and issues facing the Garden State. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow NJOHSP on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at NJOHSP. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov.
Hello, everyone. My name is Dean Barada from the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. Recently, our office, in conjunction with the Anti-Defamation League, produced a poster of white supremacist imagery that's available on our website. What we wanted to do today is talk to two of the authors of that graphic and find out a little bit more about it. So I'm joined by two analysts here, Matt and Paige. And guys, let me start off by asking, so what's the purpose of this poster? Why did we put this out?
So initially, the inspiration from this poster came from an old Anti-Defamation League, or ADL, poster they put out in around 2007. And they outlined similar categories, but I had it hanging in my cube for the past few years. And as I was looking at it, I was thinking to myself that there was a number of symbols that remain true even today, but there was also a number of symbols that we've seen crop up in the past few months that are being used by white supremacists. So, you know, I talked to my colleague Matt here, and we decided to reach out to the ADL to see if they would like to joint seal this product and give it an update and kind of match this new face of white supremacy that we're seeing in 2017.
So you had mentioned that there were a number of categories that you've sort of placed these symbols in. Can you talk about what those categories are and define them a little bit for us?
Sure, absolutely. So we created the following categories: traditional, religious, Nazi-related, and internet-based. So in terms of the traditional category, we focused on this overwhelming ideology that whites are superior to other races and this kind of this grievance associated with minorities achieving equal rights. So whether that be the white power symbol or references to Zog or the Zionist occupied government. In terms of the religious category, we focused on symbols that have either been linked to Christianity or to Odinism. Odinism is a Viking religion. It's based on Norse mythology. So there's this interplay with different runes that they have used in the past, and also images like the Celtic cross, which is sometimes referred to as Odin's cross. Beyond the religious category, we focus specifically on Nazi imagery. Nazi imagery is interesting because many of the other categories pick and choose from it. So they'll even use the swastika or the SS lightning bolt or the death's head symbol, which is very popular. And lastly, the internet category is really inspired by new symbols that we've seen recently. So Pepe the Frog, which is a cartoon character that's kind of been taken hostage by white supremacists and used for their own purposes. Also the Echo, which is used online to identify Jewish individuals for harassment, intimidation. It's basically three parentheses around a name or an organization. And even the Republic of Kekistan, which is a flag associated with this fictional country associated with Pepe the Frog. So we broke it down into four categories, but it's important to recognize that white supremacists who, you know, are part of the Ku Klux Klan, a traditional white supremacist group, don't just pick symbols in the traditional column. Doesn't matter which specific sect or faction you're a part of, they're known to kind of pick and choose symbols and create their own narrative and their own unique ideology.
Sort of buffet style.
Absolutely. Just like we see with other types of extremists who pick and choose different aspects that they like to create their own narrative, white supremacists do much of the same. And it's not uncommon to see a white supremacist with tattoos that are related to Odin or like Thor's hammer, swastikas, and also references to traditional symbols.
So Matt, there's dozens of symbols that I imagine you could choose from, and you had quite a selection here. How did you classify them into these categories? How did you go about doing that?
Well, when it came to each individual symbol, we really started to look at the origins and really where the symbol came from. Throughout the years, the symbols have varied between where they've gone. For example, the Othala rune and the Wolf's Angel, they were adopted by Nazi Germany during World War II to be used in military patches. However, the reason why we put them under the religious categories, because originally they are part of the Nordic religion, they stem from the runic alphabet where that came from. Once we had the four broad categories, we were able to kind of just pick and choose which symbols we really thought hit the broad spectrum, which were really used by a mass majority of white supremacist extremists around the nation, and then just put them into whichever category we thought they fit best in.
So this is not an exhaustive list of all the white supremacist imagery that's out there.
No, definitely not. There are possibly hundreds, maybe even thousands of other symbols, especially when you break it down into the smaller groups. Each one likes to pick and choose from categories, as Paige stated earlier. And they like to create their own symbols to kind of customize what their own group stands for, what they mean. This is also on the streets, but even prison gangs as well. When you have the white supremacist prison gangs, they like to pick and choose too.
But you would describe these as sort of the most common symbols that you're likely to see?
Yeah, these tend to be the most common, and they're also a lot of the times the foundation or the base symbols. So if someone were to customize their own symbol, for example, Joshua Stever of Aryan Strike Force, we have that as a case study at the bottom of the poster, pulled in several different symbols to kind of make his own personal way. He took the death's head, the SS bolt, different color coordinations for Nazi Germany, the Celtic cross. These are really kind of what we see as the base, and then they'll build around them to create whatever they feel is being personalized towards their group.
These symbols, do these mean, if somebody sees one of these symbols, does that mean the owner of that symbol or whoever's displaying it is a white supremacist?
No, definitely not. Each symbol needs to be taken into context for how it's being used and who exactly is using it. For example, the religious symbols, they're all used by the mass majority of religions. They've just been adopted to bring in this kind of hate ideology based on what they're around and how they view them. And for internet-based ones like Pepe the Frog, his origins actually stem from a friendly cartoon character who was just kind of hijacked, for lack of a better term, by white supremacists, and then just was given different variations of Nazi regalia, different anti-Semitic symbols on them, which then kind of created him into this mass media hate symbol. So really all just kind of depends on the situation and the individual using them.
And I think in the future, we should expect symbology of white supremacists to continue to evolve, especially as we see the more internet and social media aspect develop. That's where many of the newer symbols came from.
So you had mentioned Odinism as a source for some of these symbols, and it may be the first time many of our listeners have heard of that. Is Odinism a white supremacist religion?
Absolutely not. So Odinism, much like other religions we've seen, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, is a normal religion, an accepted religion. However, there are specific adherents that are white supremacist, and they're drawn to Odinism because of this reliance on ancient Europe, this belief in pure Viking blood, and also a lot of the stories that are involved in Norse mythology surround violence and this almost empowering man. And they find that attractive, and they find that something that allows them to justify their violence and their brutality.
So in addition to Odinism, you mentioned Christian identity, a version of Christianity as well that is used by white supremacists. Are these the only two religions that white supremacist extremists adhere to?
Primarily, I would say it's Odinists and those that are involved in Christian identity. And again, these religions are just taken, picked and chosen, much like we see with Salafi jihadists and the Quran. They pick and choose what verses of the Bible they feel upholds the narrative that whites are superior to other races.
I assume then some white supremacist extremist groups are more religious than others. Would that be fair to say some it plays very little role and some it plays a larger role? Is that fair?
Absolutely. So when you look at those who adhere as Odinists, a portion of them are white supremacists, but then there's individuals like the Ku Klux Klan that might embrace Christianity. Yeah, so I think it kind of depends across the spectrum. But then again, that's that picking and choosing of narratives that we see many white supremacists engage in.
So finally, you've also mentioned that we're seeing a new face of white supremacy, as you've called it. Do these new white supremacists still want to follow in and fulfill sort of the goals of Nazi Germany?
Really kind of depends on which organization you're looking at. A lot of the older ones, such as the National Socialist Movement, they want to become more politically accepted. So they've kind of turned away from Nazi symbols and regalia, such as the swastika, and they've started bringing on different symbols, such as the Othala Ruin. However, there is a new breed of neo-Nazi groups that are solely focused on this blood and soil aspect that Nazi Germany really idolized when they were at their peak of their power. And that there is really kind of where we're starting to see this like split in the groups between the old and the new, the ones that want to be politically accepted and the ones that are perfectly fine being labeled as neo-Nazis and wanting to really push this all-white, all-Aryan nation
Absolutely, Matt. And if I could add regarding the National Socialist Movement, so yes, they've abandoned the swastika. And the reason they did that was because they felt like it had a negative connotation, which it obviously does. And it was perceived by people they were seeking to recruit as being negative. Instead, they replaced it with the Othala rune, which essentially is just another symbol associated with Nazi Germany and Adolf Hitler, but isn't as widely recognized as the swastika is. So yes, there's this attempt to rebrand, but largely it's the same ideology that they're pushing. And again, as Matt stated, there's new groups that flat out don't care. There's negative tones around Nazi content. They're going to continue to push that out and be empowered by it.
Paige and Matt, thank you very much for being with me today. And if you're interested in seeing the graphic that they wrote, it's on our website, and we will talk to you next time. Thank you.
Again, all links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov. If you have any ideas or topics for future episodes, please contact us on Twitter at NJOHSP or email us at intelunclass@njohsp.gov. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.